Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, June 18th, 2022, front page. Midland remains at full employment. Jobless rate rises to 3.3%. Odessa holds at 4.8% for second month. By Mella McEwen. Summer doldrums have hit the Texas labor market, according to May figures released Friday by the Texas Workforce Commission. The commission said the unemployment rate in its Midland Metropolitan Statistical Area, MSA, which includes Midland and Martin counties, inched up to 3.3% in May, from 3.2% in April, but is well below the 5.7% reported last May. Odessa was at 4.8% for a second month, well below the 8.5% reported a year ago. Willie Taylor, chief executive officer of the Commission's Workforce Solutions Permian Basin, attributed the slight increase to seasonal factors, among them non-contract jobs ending when school terms ended for the summer. Midland is tracking Texas and the U.S., he told the Reporter Telegram in a telephone interview. We definitely have full employment. And when there is a job seeker's market, wages rise, and wages are high in the Midland MSA, he said. Wages in the dominant mining, logging, and construction sector, which includes oil and gas, was $842.38 million in May, more than twice second place trade, transportation, and utilities at $404.13 million. He said the workforce participation rate is great, with 100,070 Midlanders employed, up from 100,036 in April and from 95,257 last May. If companies in Midland and Odessa are not training and growing their own workforce, they're behind the curve, Taylor said. Look at the U.S. There's not many areas that aren't at full employment, he observed. For every job seeker, there are two jobs available. He said he asked members of his board of directors at the most recent meeting what unique actions they're taking to retain workers, and the answer that came back was being flexible. The Permian Basin is lucky to have community colleges and universities that not only offer skills training, but help push people into the right careers, Taylor said. He said he continues to encourage job seekers to take advantage of all the training resources available in the region. The labor market in Midland and Odessa remains strong, Taylor said, adding that it remains to be seen how inflation and government's efforts to combat it will affect the local economy. Midland's civilian labor force held steady, rising by just more than 100 to 103,490 from 103,368 in April, but it has grown by 2,425 from 101,065 last May. The number of unemployed increased to 3,420 from 3,332 in April, but is well below the 5,808 unemployed last May. Midland added 600 jobs from April to May for a total non-farm job count of 106,300 from 105,700 in April. The manufacturing sector and government sector each added 100 jobs. Trade, transportation, and utilities was the only industrial sector to lose jobs, falling by 100. For the 12 months from May 2021 to May 2022, Midland added 6,000 jobs for a growth rate of 6%. The dominant mining, logging, and construction sector again led with the creation of 3,100 new jobs. Leisure and hospitality was next with 1,100 new jobs. Trade, transportation, and utilities added 800 jobs. The manufacturing and professional and business activities sectors each added 400 jobs, and the financial activity sector and other services sector each added 200 jobs. The government sector was the only industrial sector to lose jobs, falling by 200 jobs over the year. Statewide, the unemployment rate was 4.2%, down from 4.3% in April. The state added 74,200 total non-agricultural jobs and has added 762,400 jobs since May 2021. For the seventh consecutive month, Texas set new unemployment highs as total jobs reached 13,357,100 in May. Amarillo and Austin Round Rock reported the lowest unemployment in the state at 2.7% each, followed by College Station Bryan at 2.9% and Lubbock at 3%. The highest unemployment was in McAllen-Edinburg Mission at 6.9%. Oil prices tumble. Oil falls by $8.03 on Friday alone. Natural gas ends week below $7, by Mella McEwen. Commodity prices tumbled as recession fears took center stage this week after the Federal Reserve raised interest rates by the most in almost 30 years in an effort to combat inflation. That raises the risk higher interest rates will tip the economy into recession. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange fell 3 of 5 trading days, starting with a 26-cent rise to open trading Monday and rising $2.27 Thursday. Prices fell $2 Tuesday and $3.62 Wednesday, capped by an $8.03 or 6.8% plunge Friday, the most in 3 months. WTI ended the week at $109.56, down from $120.93 Monday's close and $120.67 at last Friday's close. The posted price closed at $106.04, according to Plains All American. It was WTI's first decline in 8 weeks. "It's been a wild week," said Mark Finley, fellow in Energy and Global Oil, Center for Energy Studies at Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy. Speaking with the reporter Telegram by telephone, Finley noted that crude oil had increased somewhat while natural gas prices tumbled amidst the closure of Freeport LNG's Quintana Island facility after a fire. Natural gas futures fell 3 of 5 trading days, ending the week below $7 per MCF. The fuel's fall was highlighted by a $1.42 dive Tuesday that sent prices below $8 per MCF. Prices tried to recoup some of that loss, rising 23 cents Wednesday and another 4 cents Thursday. Prices fell 5 cents to close Friday at $6.944. Before oil prices tumbled Friday amid recession concerns, Finley said traders had been focused on concerns about tight supplies stemming domestically from oil U.S. inventories and globally from sanctions on Russia for its invasion of Ukraine. "Plus," he said, "we're now officially in hurricane season, and there's concern about a hurricane damaging Gulf Coast refineries." Strong global recovery in demand has pushed up prices for oil and natural gas, which has flowed into rising prices for everything, from gasoline to food to clothing. Finley observed that the increase in gasoline prices has comprised 20% of all inflation so far this year. Gasoline prices, which have climbed to a national record $5 per gallon, may have finally reached a level to cause demand destruction. Finley said Energy Information Administration data has shown weaker demand for gasoline and diesel, but not by a huge amount. "That makes sense," he said. "This is a wealthy country and is more able to afford the prices than poorer countries. I don't mean to minimize the pain for lower-income families. They can't afford electric vehicles. They drive older cars. They're more vulnerable to higher prices." Asked if he had a sense of what commodity prices might do in the coming weeks, he answered, "If you can tell me if the economy will go into a recession, then he could say what prices would do." Midland restaurant owners talk about inflation, menus, and rising prices, by Chandler France, Texas digital reporter. Food prices increased 9.4% between April 2021 and April 2022, the largest increase in food prices in a 12-month period since April 1981, according to the latest Consumer Price Index. This comes as overall prices increased 8.3% year over year nationally. For some Midland restaurants, the recent inflation-related price increases have led owners to make difficult decisions, including passing on their own rising costs to customers. Dustin Freeman, owner of Katie's Barbecue, said he has seen the price of meat he purchases for the restaurant increase 150 to 300% some weeks. "We never want to raise prices on our customers if we can keep from it, and we sometimes eat the cost increases, hoping that they won't stay too high for long and they will return to normal," Freeman said. "But when you have the price increases from this historic inflation we have seen, we didn't have any other choice than to increase prices." A case of eggs used to cost Michael's Charcoal Grill $20, according to General Manager Alex King. But now the same product costs the restaurant $55. King said he has seen prices for items like shortening, meat, and dry goods increase at least 5 to 10%, with some items costing the business 20 to 40% more than what it did 6 months or a year ago. "We've all had to do what all businesses have to do and raise our prices to maintain our profitability," King said. "We do hear from customers. Boy, it sure is expensive to go out to eat. I'm shocked when I go eat at other places as well." Neem Torres, co-owner of Cancun Bar and Grill, said he has seen prices rise in the products he buys for the restaurant and has had to pass down the cost to his customers. Torres said within the past 3 months, he has had to raise menu prices up to a dollar more for products like various meats and cheeses. "Inflation has caused a rise in food prices across Texas, according to Kelsey Erickson Stufert, chief public affairs officer with the Texas Restaurant Association. Stufert said wholesale food prices have increased 17%, the largest increase in five decades. "Inflation has been devastating for the restaurant industry," Stufert said. "The reality is that COVID created disruptions in the economy that we are still feeling the full feeling and effect from." Sunny Wong, a professor at the University of Houston Hobby School for Public Affairs, said the current inflationary period is being driven by a couple of factors: the war between Russia and Ukraine, interest rates remaining at low levels, and an increase in the purchasing power of consumers stemming from a lack of spending during the COVID-19 pandemic, and multiple stimulus checks are causing prices to rise. "Prices are not only rising, but they are doing so unpredictably," Stufert said. "Unstable prices have made the cost increases even more difficult to handle for restaurants in Texas," she said. "The increase in instability of prices has led to a tricky balance of passing on costs to consumers while doing so in a fair manner," Torres said. "As a restaurant owner, you try to adjust your prices, but at the same time, you don't want to take advantage of the customers," Torres said. "It is so hard to adjust and be fair when prices can go up once a week. You cannot be changing the menu that often." Products on the menu are not the only items experiencing increased costs. Freeman said other restaurant staples like paper goods, cups, and styrofoam are also experiencing price increases, as well as limited availability. "Labor shortages with Katie's vendors have caused a trickle-down effect," Freeman said. "Since the start of COVID, we have seen a huge decrease in the availability of products that we have never had issues with in the past 24 years," Freeman said. "Inflation and the workforce shortage are two issues that are intrinsically linked and causing issues with the supply of goods across the state," Stufert said. "The restaurant industry is being squeezed on the supply side of the business, which she said makes staying afloat even more difficult than it already is, given the industry's slim operating margins. Just like we don't have employees in our restaurants, the trucking industry doesn't have nearly enough employees to move goods. The meatpacking plants don't have nearly enough employees to break down meat. Farming, the list goes on and on," Stufert said. "As a result, costs get higher. Availability decreases at every step along the way." Freeman, King, and Torres each said, while inflation has affected how their restaurants operate, it has not had an impact on their customer base. Freeman said Katie's lost about 60% of its business between 2019 and 2020. And even though they are still about 20 to 25% of where they might be without COVID or inflation, they are seeing a bounce back in business. Torres said his customer base at Cancun Bar and Grill, which has served Midland for 17 years, has been back to normal since the onset of COVID-19, although business is down about 10 to 15% right now. However, he attributed the decline to a normal decrease that he said usually occurs during the summer months. Torres said he thinks business has not declined in the Midland area, despite rising costs at the restaurant and across every other industry, because the local economy is tied to oil prices. Because the oil industry is doing well in the area, Torres said he thinks Midlanders are able to comfortably go out and eat at restaurants. Midland is a very resilient city, Torres said. In Midland, the economy is probably stronger than some other cities in Texas. While restaurants in Midland seem to be handling price increases well, Stufert said every day she hears of another restaurant closing in Texas due to the combined effects of COVID-19 and inflation. Often, she said, it is restaurant owners who have been in business for many years that are deciding to close down. I think a lot of restaurant operators are looking at the cost-benefit analysis, looking at that expense report at the end of the month, and just aren't prepared to keep going at this rate, Stufert said. Unfortunately, I worry we will lose a few more restaurants, but I don't think it will be nearly as bad as what we saw early in the pandemic. However, all three Midland restaurants said they have not thought about closing down despite the challenges they have faced over the past 2 years. In fact, King said even though inflation has negatively affected Michael's, which has operated in Midland since 1988, he prefers the issues created by rising costs and limited availability of products over the uncertainty of pandemic closures. I'd rather be open and fighting the battle of high food costs than be shut down and wondering if people are going to come out and eat, King said. Wong said this period of inflation is similar to a period in the 1970s and early 1980s. During that time, he said unemployment rates were decreasing, prices were gradually rising, and the gross domestic product remained steady, similar to the current economic environment. However, because the Federal Reserve did not take action, Wong said the country experienced double-digit inflation in the early 1980s. Wong said this time around, it appears as if the Federal Reserve is being more aggressive to fight inflation. He said he does not think inflation will get worse, but he also said it might take many months before the economic situation improves significantly. I do not think the Federal Reserve wants to repeat history again, Wong said. The question is, how aggressive will they be and how quickly will they do it? Stufert said despite the challenges, she thinks the restaurant industry will survive because there will always be a demand for the services restaurants provide. With people continuing to move to Texas, she said that demand will only increase. This is a temporary state that we're all going to work through, Stufert said. We've certainly gone through inflationary periods before in our nation's history, and I have no doubt that we're going to get through this one as well. Freeman said even as some restaurants across the state have made the decision to close down due to challenges from COVID-19 and inflation, he has not considered closing KD's, which first opened in November 1997. KD's has always been a family-operated restaurant, and our employees are like family to us, Freeman said. We have always done whatever we can to make sure that our employees and their families feel they have job security and a great place to work. Midland, not Moscow, plank added to Texas GOP platform by Stuart Doreen. This year's Texas Republican Party platform will include support of the oil and gas industry and the infrastructure necessary to support domestic production. James Beacham, a former Midland County Republican Party chair, told the Reporter-Telegram that Stephen Villela has served as the district Senate District 31 delegate to the platform committee, sponsored the addition of plank number 41, Midland, not Moscow. The Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance, MOTRAN, and the Permian Basin Petroleum Association helped draft the submission. The Midland, not Moscow, entry states, "We fully support and encourage greater energy production in the Permian Basin and throughout Texas, as well as the necessary policies and infrastructure investment in roads, pipeline, and ports to support Texas workers and help America's energy security instead of increasing our reliance on foreign governments that do not benefit America or our allies." Beecham, MOTRAN's executive director, said of the platform edition, "Sometimes people forget that every dollar that comes from increased domestic production is helping fund jobs here in the USA rather than increasing the resources available to some really bad actors around the world. The Permian Basin is literally helping make the world a safer place. And they also forget that sometimes we need a little extra help with our infrastructure to accommodate that development. We are thankful for Mr. Villalba for helping get it added and the support of the platform committee. We think this helps send a powerful and important message." Republicans from across the state are meeting in Houston for the GOP state convention. Andrews woman dies after collision near Midland. A 25-year-old Andrews woman died Thursday afternoon after a Ford Bronco ran into a truck tractor, Department of Public Safety officials reported. DPS reported Friday morning that Stephanie Ann Stokes was driving the Bronco westbound in the 7500 block of Highway 80, 2.6 miles west of Midland. At that point, a 2022 International truck trailer was attempting to turn into the eastbound lanes of Highway 80 and was blocking both westbound lanes. Officials report that Stokes attempted to avoid the collision but struck the rear of the truck tractor. Stokes was not wearing a seatbelt and was pronounced dead at the scene. The accident was reported to have taken place around 3:40 p.m. Rig Report, Activity in Midland on Track to Rebound, by Mella McEwen. Efforts by U.S. oil and gas producers to increase oil and natural gas production appear to be gaining traction as both the rig count rose and domestic crude production returned to pre-pandemic levels. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes said in its weekly rig count Friday that the U.S. count jumped by 7 to 740, the highest level since March 2020. That's 270 rigs, or almost 60% higher than the 470 counted last year. The number of rigs drilling for crude oil rose by 4 to 584, the highest level since March 2020, and 211 more than the 373 reported a year ago. After remaining unchanged for a couple of weeks, the number of rigs drilling for natural gas rose by 3 to 154, the highest since September 2019, and 57 more than 97 last year. Texas was unchanged at 356 rigs, 135 more than the 221 at work in the state the previous May. The rig count in New Mexico, which was the only producing state to see a change from the prior week, jumped by 7 to 110 rigs. The Permian Basin also was unchanged at 345 rigs, 108 more than the 237 reported last year. The New Mexico portion of the Permian saw big jumps this week. Lee County, New Mexico, was the most active county in the Permian this week, climbing 7 rigs, the biggest jump among Permian counties, to 54. Eddy County, New Mexico, closely followed with 53 rigs, unchanged for the week. Midland County reported 40 rigs, down 2 for the week. Martin County had 31 rigs, unchanged for the week. Loving and Reeves counties each reported 26 rigs, down 3 for Loving and down 7, the biggest drop among Permian counties, in Reeves. Howard County recorded the second biggest increase, rising 4 rigs to 24 for the week. Upton County reported the second largest decline among Permian counties, dropping 4 rigs to 11. Andrews County added 2 rigs for 10. Enverus Foundations of the energy-focused software as a service firm Enverus said its U.S. rig count rose by 3 to 820 as of June 15th. The count is up 1% in the last month, and up 58% in the last year. According to Enverus, the largest week-over-week change was in the Williston Basin, with a decline of 3 rigs, brought the total to 37. On the month, the most notable changes was in the Gulf Coast, plus 13 to 108, and Permian, plus 9 to 313. Airport boardings up 49% this year, by Stuart Doreen. The number of people boarding an airline at Midland International Airport continued to rise in May, and so did other metrics at the airport. The city of Midland reported the number of people boarding an airline in a month again topped 50,000 in May. The total of 56,531 passengers was a 28.1% increase over May 2021 and raised the fiscal year total to 379,415, which was a 49% increase compared to the same period during fiscal year 2020-21. Also higher in May and this year are fuel sales, up 15.4% in May and 42.3% this fiscal year, and parking review, up 57.9% in May and 77.8% this fiscal year. Southwest was again the top airline at Midland International with 48.8% of passengers, up from 46.5% in April. United was second with 27.6%. American Eagle was third and again reported a decrease in passengers compared to the same month 1 year ago. Southwest and United reported increases of 50.7% and 38.8% respectively. City sales tax collection blows away forecast, by Stuart Doreen. Through three quarters of the 2021-22 fiscal year, the city of Midland is on pace to achieve its second largest sales tax collection ever. The city showed a 31.41% increase in its sales tax collection in May to push its fiscal year total to $41.591 million, which is 20.86% greater than fiscal year 2021. That total means if the last 3 months of the fiscal year, which ends in September, is equal to last year, the city will finish with $53.848 million, which would be more than $7 million more than last year and would beat the city's forecast, $51 million, by nearly $3 million. A more likely scenario is the city continues its pace and collect $14.813 million over the last 3 months to finish with $56.404 million, which would beat the second largest collection in city history, $51.117 million, by more than $5 million. The city reports Midland has posted 8 straight gains months of sales tax growth and that during all 8 months, the growth has been at least 17.17% and been as much as 48.54%. The collection so far in Midland is also more than $6 million greater than the total this fiscal year in Odessa, $35,446,741.
Hi, my name is Caitlin, and I will be reading the Odessa American for Saturday, June 18th, 2022. Head Choir Director Going Back to School, by Ruth Campbell. After 9 years with Ector County ISD, Ken Siloff is heading back to school in the fall to earn a master's in chorale conducting at the University of North Texas. Siloff was head choir director at Permian High School. He had been associate choir director under Director of Fine Arts Aaron Hawley for 3 years. Siloff started with the district at Crockett Middle School and was at Odessa High School for a year before moving to PHS. Siloff's wife, Annie, was the choir director at Nimitz Middle School. Siloff said going for a master's has been a dream of his for quite some time. The years just kind of kept passing by, and as Annie and I had been discussing it, it just felt like the right time. Again, in consultation with family, mentors, and through a lot of prayer, it just felt like the right time, Siloff said. He will be studying with Alan Hightower, a former director of choirs at Permian. Siloff said it was really cool that Hightower is a Mojo alumni. He's one of the best in the field, and I'm really looking forward to working with him, Siloff said. He searched schools that he thought he'd be interested in and narrowed it down to UNT and the University of Cincinnati College Conservatory of Music. I applied at both, auditioned at both, and was accepted at both. After much prayer and talking with my wife and other family members, friends, and mentors, I decided on UNT because we both were hoping to stay in Texas, certainly because my wife would be able to more easily find a job where she would be able to continue teaching music, Siloff said. He added that knowing Hightower for some time before this, knowing that he's at UNT and that there's a strong connection between UNT and Hightower, it felt right. He doesn't know if he'll continue on for a doctorate at UNT, but he hopes to complete his master's and doctorate back-to-back. Part of the process of going back to school is figuring out what he wants to do next. But something that's on top of my list right now is to move on and teach at the college level, working with undergraduates and eventually, one day, graduate students. I think that would be something that I would really enjoy and really find a lot of fulfillment in, Siloff said. The Siloffs are both from Michigan originally, although they didn't meet until they got to Odessa. He's from Northville. They have an 8-month-old daughter, Charlotte. I moved there in 2013. She moved in 2014 as she looked to come to Odessa, Dr. Daniel Laudenbach, who was the director of fine arts at the time, made the introduction, and as soon as we met, we became close friends and ended up doing everything together when she moved down and just became very close, Siloff said. He earned a bachelor's degree in chorale music education from the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. Dr. Laudenbach was the reason I ended up there, in Odessa. He did his DMA, his Doctor of Musical Arts degree, at the University of Michigan in saxophone performance, and so he knew that students coming out of college there were looking for jobs. But there's just not a lot of availability in the state of Michigan for brand new teachers. They're looking more for experienced teachers. It's obviously a much smaller state, so fewer opportunities, and so he would contact the University of Michigan and Michigan State University, which is where he found Annie, who came highly recommended from their professors. One thing led to another, bada bing, bada boom, and I ended up in Odessa, Siloff said. He said the people in Odessa are what make it special. Furthermore, the opportunities that I was presented with while in West Texas were unbelievable. I'm very proud of the things that I was able to accomplish while I was there, Siloff added. He took a choir to the Southwest American Chorale Directors Association, earned the Texas Chorale Directors Association Young Director of Distinction Award, and met countless professionals in his field who have helped him along the way. There are just so many things that have set me up for success while I was in Odessa, and I have to thank not only the professionals in Odessa, but also the people that helped foster that positive experience while we were there, Siloff added. One of the things he learned about being in charge is that it's not always sunshine and roses. With the joy and excitement comes the not-so-fun stuff, including those people who don't think you should be there. My time in Odessa has reinforced the reason that I love doing what I do, which is the students and the music. There are some of my favorite moments. Some of my favorite moments while in Odessa were made possible because of the music and because of the students, because of the connection between those two elements, Siloff said. He added that he will miss the students dearly. There are so many students who have had such a positive and strong impact on my life that have made me a better man, a better teacher, a better dad. Those students, especially at Perman, were my family, Siloff said. He added that he shared his proposal to Annie with one of his choirs and several former students attended his wedding in Michigan. I remember texting all of my students the day of my wedding saying, "We are getting married on our communication text app," and sending them a picture of me and Annie, and then sharing with them that we were expecting our first child. Those are big milestone moments. I think Annie and I would both say the same thing. Some of our favorite moments were not sharing that news with friends, but sharing that news with our students was probably the most exciting part, he said. As for being a student again, Silov said he has mixed emotions, such as the anxiety that comes with being a student and a high achiever. "I have to do entrance placement exams coming up here in a few weeks, and it makes me nervous. What if I'm not perfect? What if it doesn't go perfectly well? And there's a great deal of excitement. I love learning and I love watching and observing. So I'm just so excited to be focused on that, being responsible for just myself rather than 350 other students and several other adults," he said. He added that the PHS choir program is now in the hands of Laurie Wash and Stephanie Burton. "I know that God is watching out for both of them, both Laurie, Stephanie, and all of the students, and I know great things lie in store for that program under their leadership. It is going to be an incredible opportunity for those students to have Mrs. Wash at the helm," Silov said. "She'll do wonderful things, and she'll continue to achieve greater and greater things with the Permian Choir. I'm very excited for all of them." Director of Fine Arts Aaron Hawley said Silov was associate choir director to Hawley's head director. Hawley said, "There is a long line of outstanding people who have led the PHS program, and Silov upheld that tradition." Hawley said he had the privilege of being in Silov's wedding. "We are a close-knit group," he said.
Monkeypox from same family as smallpox. The story was written by Carol A. Cates, Chief Nursing Officer, Odessa Regional Medical Center. "This is kind of terrible, but I am excited to finally be able to talk about something in the news that is healthcare-related and not COVID. Not that I am in any way excited to hear and talk about another viral disease of concern in the world, but at least it's something different. The reason monkeypox is currently of concern is because it is normally a disease that is only seen in Central and Western Africa, but has been seen in the last few weeks in several countries, including the U.S., that don't normally see any cases of monkeypox. Monkeypox is rare. The virus that causes monkeypox is in the same family as smallpox, the vaccinia virus, which is used in smallpox vaccine, and cowpox. It was first discovered in 1958 in a group of research monkeys, which is where the name came from. The first recorded human case was in 1970 in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Despite the fact we are seeing cases in the U.S. right now, the overall risk here is very low. African rodents are suspected to play a part in the transmission of monkeypox between animals and humans. Monkeypox spreads between people primarily through direct contact with infected sores, scabs, or body fluids. It can spread by respiratory droplets with prolonged face-to-face contact. It can spread during activities such as sex, kissing, cuddling, or touching parts of the body with infected sores. It also can spread by surface contacts, such as touching clothing, bandages, and linens that have touched infected sores. I know that sounds like a lot of ways to transmit, but if you think about it, all those ways are up close and personal. It's not like COVID, where you need to stay 6 feet away and should wear a mask, because it doesn't take much for the respiratory droplets to cause infection. With monkeypox, for the most part, you need to be touching people or their fluids. Because of that, the best way to prevent monkeypox is to avoid contact with infected people or animals and avoid touching the things that come in contact with infected sores. The other thing to prevent monkeypox is something that prevents everything that is transmitted through contact, good hand hygiene, either by washing your hands with soap and water, making sure to scrub all the surfaces of the hands for at least 20 seconds, or by using hand sanitizer, covering all the hand surfaces and rubbing until hands are dry. Monkeypox symptoms usually start to show about 7 to 14 days after infection, but can be as early as 5 days or as late as 21 days after exposure. Early symptoms are fever, headache, muscle aches, backache, swollen lymph nodes, chills, and exhaustion. Those are followed by a rash that begins on the face and then spreads over the body. The rash eventually develops pustules that scab over, then fall off. The entire process can last 4 weeks. The scary part of monkeypox is that the mortality rate is about 10%. The other scary thing is monkeypox, like all viruses, can change, and the more people it infects, the faster it can change. We saw that with COVID, the more people who were infected, the more opportunities it had to change, which led to the multiple waves and reinfections we saw and continue to see. That is why prevention is so very important. It stops that ability of the virus to reproduce and change. Because monkeypox is a virus, there really isn't a cure. Some antivirals have been shown to help, but treatment mostly is supportive care so the body can heal itself. Because of that, people with weak immune systems, the elderly, small children, those with chronic illnesses or immune disorders, are at higher risk to both get and have severe consequences of monkeypox. Again, the risk of monkeypox is low, but because it's a virus and can change, people need to be aware and take measures to prevent transmission. The best way to do that is wash your hands, stay away from people who are ill. If you are ill, stay away from others and seek medical attention as soon as possible if you start showing the early symptoms of monkeypox, especially if you know you have been exposed to someone who has monkeypox.
Hi, my name is Caitlin, and I will be reading the Odessa American for Saturday, June 18th, 2022. Head Choir Director Going Back to School by Ruth Campbell. After 9 years with Ector County ISD, Ken Siloff is heading back to school in the fall to earn a master's in chorale conducting at the University of North Texas. Siloff was head choir director at Permian High School. He had been associate choir director under Director of Fine Arts Aaron Hawley for 3 years. Siloff started with the district at Crockett Middle School and was at Odessa High School for a year before moving to PHS. Siloff's wife, Annie, was the choir director at Nimitz Middle School. Siloff said going for a master's has been a dream of his for quite some time. The years just kind of kept passing by, and as Annie and I had been discussing it, it just felt like the right time. Again, in consultation with family, mentors, and through a lot of prayer, it just felt like the right time, Siloff said. He will be studying with Alan Hightower, a former director of choirs at Permian. Siloff said it was really cool that Hightower is a Mojo alumni. He's one of the best in the field, and I'm really looking forward to working with him, Siloff said. He searched schools that he thought he'd be interested in and narrowed it down to UNT and the University of Cincinnati College Conservatory of Music. I applied at both, auditioned at both, and was accepted at both. After much prayer and talking with my wife and other family members, friends, and mentors, I decided on UNT because we both were hoping to stay in Texas. Certainly because my wife would be able to more easily find a job where she would be able to continue teaching music, Siloff said. He added that knowing Hightower for some time before this, knowing that he's at UNT and that there's a strong connection between UNT and Hightower, it felt right. He doesn't know if he'll continue on for a doctorate at UNT, but he hopes to complete his master's and doctorate back to back. Part of the process of going back to school is figuring out what he wants to do next. But something that's on top of my list right now is to move on and teach at the college level, working with undergraduates and eventually, one day, graduate students. I think that would be something that I would really enjoy and really find a lot of fulfillment in, Siloff said. The Siloffs are both from Michigan originally, although they didn't meet until they got to Odessa. He's from Northville. They have an 8-month-old daughter, Charlotte. I moved there in 2013. She moved in 2014 as she looked to come to Odessa, Dr. Daniel Laudenbach, who was the director of fine arts at the time, made the introduction, and as soon as we met, we became close friends and ended up doing everything together when she moved down and just became very close, Siloff said. He earned a bachelor's degree in choral music education from the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. Dr. Laudenbach was the reason I ended up there, in Odessa. He did his DMA, his Doctor of Musical Arts degree, at the University of Michigan in saxophone performance, and so he knew that students coming out of college there were looking for jobs. But there's just not a lot of availability in the state of Michigan for brand new teachers. They're looking more for experienced teachers. It's obviously a much smaller state, so fewer opportunities, and so he would contact the University of Michigan and Michigan State University, which is where he found Annie, who came highly recommended from their professors. One thing led to another, bada bing, bada boom, and I ended up in Odessa, Siloff said. He said the people in Odessa are what make it special. Furthermore, the opportunities that I was presented with while in West Texas were unbelievable. I'm very proud of the things that I was able to accomplish while I was there, Siloff added. He took a choir to the Southwest American Chorale Directors Association, earned the Texas Chorale Directors Association Young Director of Distinction Award, and met countless professionals in his field who have helped him along the way. There are just so many things that have set me up for success while I was in Odessa, and I have to thank not only the professionals in Odessa, but also the people that helped foster that positive experience while we were there, Siloff added. One of the things he learned about being in charge is that it's not always sunshine and roses. With the joy and excitement comes the not-so-fun stuff, including those people who don't think you should be there. My time in Odessa has reinforced the reason that I love doing what I do, which is the students and the music. There are some of my favorite moments. Some of my favorite moments while in Odessa were made possible because of the music and because of the students, because of the connection between those two elements, Siloff said. He added that he will miss the students dearly. There are so many students who have had such a positive and strong impact on my life that have made me a better man, a better teacher, a better dad. Those students, especially at Perman, were my family, Siloff said. He added that he shared his proposal to Annie with one of his choirs and several former students attended his wedding in Michigan. I remember texting all of my students the day my wedding, saying, "We are getting married on our communication text app," and sending them a picture of me and Annie, and then sharing with them that we were expecting our first child. Those are big milestone moments. I think Annie and I would both say the same thing. Some of our favorite moments were not sharing that news with friends, but sharing that news with our students was probably the most exciting part, he said. As for being a student again, Siloff said he has mixed emotions, such as the anxiety that comes with being a student and a high achiever. I have to do entrance placement exams coming up here in a few weeks, and it makes me nervous. What if I'm not perfect? What if it doesn't go perfectly well? And there's a great deal of excitement. I love learning and I love watching and observing. So I'm just so excited to be focused on that, being responsible for just myself rather than 350 other students and several other adults, he said. He added that the PHS choir program is now in the hands of Laurie Wash and Stephanie Burton. I know that God is watching out for both of them, both Laurie, Stephanie, and all of the students, and I know great things lie in store for that program under their leadership. It is going to be an incredible opportunity for those students to have Mrs. Wash at the helm, Siloff said. She'll do wonderful things, and she'll continue to achieve greater and greater things with the Permian Choir. I'm very excited for all of them. Director of Fine Arts, Aaron Hawley, said Siloff was associate choir director to Hawley's head director. Hawley said, "There is a long line of outstanding people who have led the PHS program, and Siloff upheld that tradition." Hawley said he had the privilege of being in Siloff's wedding. "We are a close-knit group," he said. Honoring the Velvets by guest contributor. Doo-wop group The Velvets were honored Saturday afternoon at Blackshear Elementary School in Odessa. The Velvets were an American doo-wop group from Odessa. They were formed in 1959 by Blackshear 8th grade English teacher Virgil Johnson and four of his students, Mark Prince, Clarence Rigsby, Robert Earl Thursby, and William Solomon. Water Negative for Harmful Bacteria by Odessa American. Odessans can go back to using City of Odessa water to brush their teeth and rinse their veggies after test results came back negative for dangerous bacteria Saturday afternoon. City of Odessa Utilities Director Tom Kerr said the final test results came back negative around 2 p.m. Ector County and Odessans have had to boil their water before consuming it since 1 a.m. Tuesday. The Texas Commission on Environmental Quality required the city to issue a boil alert when crews were forced to shut down its entire water system following the break of a 24-inch water line at 42nd and San Jacinto Street at dinner time Monday. Although the city does have a valve system that usually allows it to isolate and fix breaks, the valve nearest the fractured pipeline turned out to be faulty. As a result, the entire system had to be shut down. Most Odessans had their water back by late Thursday, but it took a while before test samples could be gathered because crews had to wait for the chlorine in the system to reach the appropriate levels. It also takes 24 hours for the test results to return. Crews finished replacing the faulty valve, located at Andrews Highway and 42nd Street, around 5:30 a.m. Saturday, and shortly thereafter fixed a minor leak that popped up at the original break site, Kerr said.
Good morning. This is Julie, reading from the Odessa American on Sunday, June 19th. School's old money vexes Landgraf. UTPB has to fight and scrape for leftovers in UT system, he says, by Bob Campbell. Without the state constitutional amendment that Representative Brooks Landgraf will sponsor next year's legislative session, the six public school districts in Landgraf's District 81 will get no bigger of a share of oil and natural gas severance tax revenues than they have now. Landgraf said Article 3, Section 49G of the Texas Constitution specifies that appointment formula that divides up the BureauCop oil and gas money that the Permian Basin sends to Austin each month, and that he will seek voters' approval of a fairer system. Under the current law, we won't benefit more than any other school districts, the Odessa Republican said Tuesday. However, the increased production will lead to increased in the amount of property tax revenues. Along with the Ector County Independent School District, Landgraf represents the districts of Kermit, Wink Loving, Monahans, Wicket Pyote, Grand Falls Royalty, and the Barstow part of Pecos Barstow Toya District. The Texas Oil and Gas Association says oil producers sent the state comptroller's office in Austin a record $666 million and natural gas producers $339 million for April before oil paid $595 million and gas $413 million for May. From their perspective, 4.6 and 7.5% severance tax levies. ECISD got $299 million from the state for the previous biennium and $311 for the current two-year period. Superintendent Scott Murray said, having served 7.5 years in the Texas House of Representatives in Austin, Landgraf said, neither University of Texas Permian Basin nor Odessa College gets severance tax money, so-called because it's derived from the extraction of non-renewable natural resources, but are financed from the state's general fund. The state gave UTPB $67.5 million for the previous biennium and $71 million for the current one, while Odessa College received $19.3 million and $19.7 million, officials said. Landgraf said UTPB suffers from the same humble stepchild status as other relative small schools in the UT system. Even an Aggie like me can't recognize the flagship campus in office, Austin, gets everything it needs or desires, while the smaller schools, like UTPB, have to fight and scrape for the leftovers, he said. It's a struggle. It's the old UT system. UTPB has tremendous growth potential, said President Dr. Woodley, has demonstrated amazing leadership to prioritize her resources and keep going what needs to be done. That's why I was pleased in the last session to get $44 million in tuition revenue bonds to renovate the Mesa building, which is almost 50 years old now and has outgrown its original purpose. UTPE serves a student population that looks like Texas, many of them first-generation college students. It has a lot more growth potential than UT Austin does. It continues to make sure the needs of our higher education institutions and school districts in the Permian Basin get what they need from the state, even after we have to get creative about the resources. The UT and Texas A&M systems benefit greatly from the oil and gas-fueled Permian University Fund. It's been successful in cutting down the liability for Robinhood payments for the West Texas school districts, and my goal is to get rid of that imbalance altogether, Landgraf said. Larger districts like ECISD no longer have the Robinhood payments, allowing our school districts to keep more of the money they're generating and something I will continue working on. Asked if the state had exploited West Texas oil and gas revenues to the benefit of the big cities while begrudging returning only a tiny part of that money to the region, Landgraf said yes, it has definitely turned out that way. That's why we need a constitutional amendment for a fair and equitable investment by the state for public education, infrastructure and public safety in the communities that give so much wealth for our state. He said the crux of the dilemma is the legislative formulas based funding on population. The population distribution model does account for the irregularities, which makes it hard for West Texas school districts to recruit teachers and our colleges to recruit faculty, Landgraf said. In an aside, the 41-year-old attorney said the Odessa District of the Texas Department of Transportation only averages $51 million in annual funding during the 4 years before he took office, but that grew to $158 million annually during the next 4 years, and it has improved to $360 million a year in 3.5 years. He has been vice chairman of the House Transportation Committee. Landgraf chairs the Oil and Gas-related House Environmental Regulations Committee, and he's a member of the House Administration Committee and the Select Committees on Constitutional Rights and Remedies and Youth Health and Safety.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.